The man was crawling cautiously behind the inadequate cover of an outcrop of fused glass. He moved very much like a man who got his ideas about stealth from watching adventure films. He was holding a small handgun. It didn't look as though it had much stopping power, but Lindsay didn't approve. He let off a shot that nicked the rock a few feet from the man's head.
"Throw the gun this way," he suggested.
He watched shock, panic, and resignation chase one another across the man's face as it scanned the thicket of anonymous bushes that had just spoken.
"The gun," he repeated.
He could make out the detail of the man's belt. Gum at issue, of course, but light duty. That meant he could only have come up from forward base.
"Okay, Bush," said the man.
He tossed the gun in Lindsay's general direction and slowly moved his hands. A sliver of rock nicked his ear as another round hit the glassy boulder beside him.
"The belt, too," said the bush.
"You're Larry Lindsay," said the man. "They said you were stone paranoid. No offense, you understand."
"None taken. Move those hands real careful now."
The hands moved real careful.
"You don't know me. I guess we never met. I'm Joshua Valiente, security man. From forward base, you know."
He flinched as Lindsay appeared only a few feet away. Approaching someone by moving up towards them through an adjacent world was an old trick, but it never failed to disconcert. Valiente found himself looking up into a pair of grey-blue eyes that were entirely without mercy. This bastard had really shoot, he told himself. Don't even look at your own gun. He'd really shoot you, up here where no one else will ever come. He wouldn't even have to bury the body.
"Prove it," said Lindsay.
Valiente shrugged what he hoped was an unaggressive shrug.
"I can't."
"All good security men carry little plastic cards," said Lindsay. "They have little pictures of themselves in case they forget what they look like."
"Not when they're off duty. Can I stand up?"
Lindsay stepped back. Possibly that meant yes. Valiente didn't risk it. "There isn't any forward base now," he said, as levelly as he could. "The station's there all right, but there aren't any people. They're dead." He paused, waiting for the reaction. It was like dropping a brick into a pool of treacle.
"Aren't you going to say anything?" he asked.
"No. I've got the gun. You talk."
"All right, you soulless bastard.
Someone poisoned them. You know the little spring where they get the water? In there. I was out hunting, but I saw her when I came back, smashing up equipment. Then she went moving. I followed her up here until I caught your beacon."
Lindsay regarded him for some time. "I go back to base once in a while," he said. "I'd never seen you before. Didn't even know they had security men."
"I only came up 3 weeks ago."
"I see you've been doing a great job," said Lindsay.
"Look, she's here, somewhere, and if we stand here all day, then she'll be at the other end of a trajectory."
The chase had taken 4 days, nearly. The murderer had used the base's generator to give an initial boost, but the guard had been bright enough to scavenge for spare charge batteries. They meant a weight penalty, but not for long. There was a trail of burnt-out cells across 3,000 alternate Earths, discarded after a series of mind-punishing moves that drained the power and sent the guard pinwheeling across unsuspecting landscapes. Pity about the belt. There had been time either to take one of the more rugged models that were specifically designed for the high megas, or to find extra batteries and a knapsack to carry them. There hadn't been time for both. There ought to have been time to do something about the bodies. It hadn't been a subtle poison, just a slow-acting one. There would have to be time later. The guard wasn't very experienced at tacking on the move, but he knew one thing: never flip across alternate worlds without also moving laterally. It's too easy for the quarry to wait for you right in the place you started from, and then he needn't even shoot. A heavy stone would be sufficient. So the trick was to duck, flip, and run, and take the occasional risk by jumping 2 or 3 worlds at once. They had both slept sporadically, in odd corners of the landscape. Meat was easy to come by, hard to cook.
Once they had arrived back to back, a few feet from each other. They both fired and flipped. So the two bullets sped away from each other over a deserted landscape. Maybe the only artifacts that world would ever see. You don't have to do this, the guard's conscience kept repeating. No one expects you to do this. You're not paid for it. Why play Mounties? Even if you win, how will you get back? It'll take years if you get back at all. And conscience was pushed against a metaphorical wall and told, because there were five children on the base, the youngest was three, and the poison attacked the nerves, and they weren't quite dead when I got there. And so they dodged and tracked across worlds as the microscopic changes began to multiply into the high megas. There had been two blips on Lindsay's detector. The second one was lying in a crater, semi-conscious. From here, he could see she too was wearing a basic belt with limited detectors. It must have been like stepping into a well. A gun was lying a few feet away. Lindsay scooped it up and shoved it into a pocket, then turned his attention to the woman herself. She was wearing a red jumpsuit, ugly with pockets, but highly practical for moving, where what you couldn't carry, you didn't take. A lightly built person could tote about 60 pounds of gear before battery drain began to soar. Most of the pockets were empty, but there were still a few unspent batteries. Lindsay undid the belt and slung it over one shoulder. He picked up the woman and slung her over the other. Wrong, but there didn't seem to be any obviously broken bones. If there were, then tough.